Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, we're back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do. Focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. So glad to have you. This week, special week here at the McBurney compound, as I was called upon second stringer to fill in for Pastor Bob at Denver Bible Church this Sunday. So I highly recommend that everyone within the sound of my voice order the sermon from Sunday, November 10th. Denver Bible Church. It was a powerhouse sermon. Indeed. So anyway, I'm pretty fired up having had an opportunity to do that. It was great. And I want to thank Pastor Bob for the honor. Indeed, it was an honor. And I think we're just going to jump right into it. I want to jump right into some politics. You can see what I said on the sermon when you order the sermon and buy it from Denver Bible Church. And I think it'd be reasonable to request that everyone pay double for the sermon. Because I was second string, so times two, right? Yeah, pay double for the sermon. No, we'd probably give it to you for half price. But you can go to Denver Bible Church and just make a donation for, I don't know, $500, $5,000, whatever, and then just put in the notes that you want Doug's sermon. We'll send that right along. All right. Jumping right into politics, because time is a-wasting. My prediction, my bold, brave prediction on live Denver radio last week has been proven correct. Ken Cuccinelli, hapless attorney general there in Virginia, was defeated by vampire Terry McAuliffe. Although I have to admit, the Obamacare disaster almost cost me the bet. I think the vampire pulled within... fell to just 2 points from defeat, and Cuccinelli gained there at the end. But he was still defeated. I have a report from the Associated Press. The Associated Press says Democrats never relented in their criticism of Republican Ken Cuccinelli's position on abortion, women's reproductive health, and even divorce. Now, abortion and women's reproductive health, isn't that redundant? Is there any difference in the mind of a Democrat between abortion and women's reproductive health? Does not abortion equal women's reproductive health? In fact, if a woman has not had an abortion, does a Democrat consider her reproductively healthy? I think not. So I think that's a redundancy that the editors there at the Associated Press probably should have caught. But this endless attack on Cuccinelli over social issues, according to the Associated Press, they say it took a toll on Cuccinelli, especially among female voters. A poll showed that Cuccinelli consistently struggled to connect with women in his race against Democratic vampire Terry McAuliffe. They say that Cuccinelli spent the critical final days of the election trying to set the record straight. That's the way the AP reports it. What Ken Cuccinelli did in the critical final days of the election for the governorship of Virginia was to run away from social conservatives. And that includes women. Believe it or not, there's a large cadre of women out there who don't believe in killing babies. But Ken Cuccinelli ran away from them and into the arms of the Republican establishment advisors, allowing a sleazy vampire bagman political hack socialist who I'm convinced would probably rather kill and eat a child rather than see it born alive, especially if it's a poor minority child. Terry McAuliffe would rather kill it and eat it himself. And he has now become the governor of the state that is the cradle of American civilization, the formerly great state of Virginia. Thank you to the heathens and the pagans running the Republican establishment for advising Mr. Cuccinelli into defeat. And I think the Republican, the Karl Rove types, the physical conservatives, I think they're happy that Cuccinelli lost. And I think the line has been drawn in the sand in the Republican Party. And the battle to end the Republican Party, I believe, officially started at the closing of the polls in Virginia. And I have another bold prediction. This might be too bold, but I'm going to make it anyway. My prediction is that when the 2016 election occurs for president, the nominee that runs against the Democrat will not be a Republican. The Republican Party will have effectively committed suicide in 2013-2014. And that's my bold prediction for the week. All right. Now, one more story on that from the politics file. We got a number of interesting and amusing pieces from CNN, an often reliable source for ridiculous and outrageous liberal stupidity. In their exit polling, they asked a number of questions to Virginia voters in the gubernatorial election. The news agency, that's CNN, categorized respondents through a wide variety of demographic identifiers. And on page 3 of its exit poll document, its exit results document, CNN had this question, quote, "Are you a white, born-again Christian?" Quote. That was one of the questions they wanted to know. CNN wants to know if you're a white, born-again Christian. I'm not sure. I think these results probably went directly over to the NSA, you know, so that they could prepare the proper internment camps, have a good idea how many they were going to need for Virginia there. I'm being facetious, by the way, about the internment camps. But this question seriously was on the exit results document, question from CNN. So, by the way, 73% of Virginia voters said no. And we don't know if it's just because maybe they weren't white, maybe they didn't consider them born again, or maybe they just weren't Christians. We just don't know. But almost 30% of Virginia voters said, yeah, I'm a white, born again Christian. So things seem to have, well, this seems to confirm what happened out here in Colorado when we voted to end the murdering of innocent people, the legalized killing of children. About 30% are with us. And whether you're white or not, or whether you realize you're born again or think you're born again, there seems to be about 30% of people who are just decent human beings and not insane murderers, which would be all the rest. There's like 70% of the country has gone straight to hell in a handbasket, or they just don't know where they're going, and they're looking for someone to lead them. And I hope it's the 27 to 30% of us who don't kill and eat children, and don't stomp puppies, don't strangle kittens, and don't want to steal the money from future generations and all the other Tea Party stuff. Anyway, so there you go, from CNN, from the politics. I've got another one from the politics file. Since it was an election week this past week, political file's a little thick this week. Colorado voters, that's where we come to you, by the way, from a mile above the rest of you. That's right, we look down upon you. As we go to air today here at the Weekly Worldview, Colorado voters, according to Yahoo News, have approved a 25% tax on marijuana. Yeah. The report says a Colorado measure to impose a sales and excise tax of 25% on legalized dope and earmarked the first $40 million in revenue for public schools has been approved, or was approved, by voters last Tuesday. There, here, there, wherever you are. Here or there in Colorado. And so the genius politicians in Denver, they think they're going to tax pot at 25%, and that all the potheads are going to line up and pay the tax, and then they're going to use that money for the government schools. Now, out here in Colorado, we voted down a ballot initiative. How much money were they trying to steal for the teachers' union? I don't even know if I marked that. Anyway, they were going to steal another billion or so from us, $500 million, $400 million, I forget. But we voted that down. And we decided to do it. Apparently, the body politic in Colorado here decided that we're going to fund our government schools through the sales of dope, along with the confiscatory property taxes that we all pay out here. Yeah. Oh, yeah, they were trying to raise a ballot measure. Well, who cares? You people don't care about that. Anyway, I think that the potheads are just going to buy their dope from other potheads, and they're not going to pay the tax. And my bold prediction, another bold prediction, I'm having a pretty bold week. My prediction is that the tax revenue from marijuana in the first year in Colorado will be less than $10 million. That's my. They project it's going to be 40. Okay, I predict it will be less than 10, but there will be 10 times as many people getting stoned. Okay, my bold prediction for the state of Colorado. All right, now we move from Colorado to a national story, even an international story, from the Culture File. This is from the French press agency. Writing in the British Medical Journal, the story is about ADHD and the associated drugs. Writing in the British Medical Journal, BMJ, that makes sense, BMJ, the British Medical Journal, researchers noted treatment for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder had risen massively in recent years, even though its causes are unclear and the drugs prescribed can have adverse effects. According to AFP, ADHD is a disorder blamed for severe and frequent bouts of inattention, hyperactivity, or impulsivity. Children and young adolescents are those who are most diagnosed with it. Well, for crying out loud, frequent bouts of inattention, hyperactivity, or impulsivity. Well, the definition of the disorder describes almost every teenager alive. It's a wonder they all haven't been diagnosed and drugged. Well, experts, according to the article, fear the term ADHD may medicalize problems related to a child's personality or maturity level, the effects of poor parenting or other home problems. Yeah, that means divorce and child abuse, all related child abuse, up to and including sending your children to the government school, which is often where they're diagnosed with ADHD, right there in the place that is screwing them up. Yeah, they don't say divorce, but home problems, it's divorce. Oh, and poor parenting. Did I not point this out 10 years ago? That it was poor parenting primarily that led to a lot of the mental issues in kids? Because their neural pathways have not been being properly conditioned by their parents to understand discipline and self-control, and that leads, especially in the teenage years, I believe, well, to things like frequent bouts of inattention, hyperactivity, or impulsivity. The kids are out of control, and eventually they end up with a genuine mental illness. And the first option for parents seems to be to drug the kids. Let's give them amphetamines. That's got to help. Anyway, I could go through the statistics, but it's just shocking. The rates of children diagnosed ADHD and being put on these powerful drugs have nearly doubled in the last decade. And it certainly is disturbing for all of us who look out on the public scene and have concern for the future of our children and our nation and our own selves, frankly. Very disturbing stuff going on. Speaking of the public schools, let's go to reason number 720 to homeschool your children. Do not institutionalize your children, and certainly do not send your children into the government schools. We go to Calabasas High School, just north of Los Angeles, where they have this year for the first time crowned a homecoming queen and queen. Now, this is from Breitbart. Breitbart points out that the honor is traditionally granted to a male and female student. They have to point that out these days. Normally, this, just in case you've forgotten. And Breitbart notes that this demonstrates, this election of the first homecoming queen and queen demonstrates that societal values are shifting. A according to Breitbart. Breitbart's fair balanced, and neutral. We don't say they're shifting. We say they're sliding over the rim into the pit of hell is where societal values are going. Anyway, the queen was Lily, and the queen was Greta. And Greta is president of the Gay and Straight Alliance Club. She says that she and her partner were chosen, quote, because usually the homecoming king and queen are the most popular in their group of friends. Whereas we are friends with all the little groups of people who've never had a voice before. And to me, this is the high school version of the political extortion being practiced in Washington, D.C. today. If you've heard the author of the new book, Extortion, interviewed on any of the radio shows, it's shocking what's going on with the money. But the same thing, a very similar thing, I would say, is happening in our high school, in our government schools, high schools especially, except that in D.C. it's for the money. In high school, it's for popularity and acceptance. That's the currency of high school. And if you're not friends and you haven't bowed to the Gay, Straight, Lesbian, Queer, Transgendered, Freak of Nature Alliance or whatever the club is, you're going to lose popularity and acceptance. And these two lesbians, the teenage girls, by the way, obviously abused, mentally ill children, have appropriated the currency in high school, the popularity and acceptance currency, and turned it into a means by which they've achieved a political victory. And to me, this is the mark of the beast, or at least it's one of the marks of the beast. Our young people are now conditioned to bow at the altar of homosexualism. And they know that if they don't, that they'll be banished, that they won't be popular, that they won't gain acceptance into the in crowd. And the same thing is happening in business, and it's happening in politics. It's all happening at the altar of homosexualism. And I don't believe the mark of the beast is a physical mark. I believe it's in your forehead, and it's in your right hand. It's what you think and what you do and what you're willing to do to gain the currency of the day, even when it goes against everything that's right and good.
The devil says.
And that brings us to reason. Quiet it down, boys. That brings us to reason 719, to homeschool your children. Don't institutionalize your children, and certainly don't send them into the government schools. This story is actually about private schools. It's a story from the New York Post. They report that in a number of elite private schools, students are throwing out-of-control booze and sex-fueled parties. Now, we all remember high school, right? And what happened that our parents didn't know about around prom time and things like that? Well, this is something like that, except by a factor of 100, an order of magnitude more severe and more destructive. They talk about these elite private schools there in the Northeast, and the administration of one such school warned in a recent letter that often after school-sponsored events, such as homecomings, the wild parties are often dubbed rando fests. That's a new one for me. How about you? I'm asking my extremely attractive audio engineer. Are you familiar with the term rando fest? She's not familiar, and nor was I. Keeping in mind that I have three daughters that I love immensely and that I want to protect and prevent the culture from corrupting and defiling them. A rando fest is a party where the goal of the boys is to seduce and use what they call randos. And that's a code word for an unattractive, drunken girl. Okay? Are you thinking about institutionalizing your children in public or private school? any school that does not have Jesus Christ at the center of its curriculum is open to this type of thing. According to the New York Post, upperclassmen or alumni book venues and hire bouncers and promote the parties on Facebook, and they charge the young people $20 to $40 per head to come in. Now, the parties themselves are alcohol-free, so many students get drunk or high beforehand, quickly downing 4 or 5 shots of hard liquor before the event. And at these elite private schools, they're on the I should call them the elite private institutions, because the children there are being institutionalized by their well-to-do parents. At these elite institutions, awkward Mondays has become a common phrase. Now, you can probably already guess what that means, right? It's a common phrase where students complain about having to see the person that they fornicated with over the weekend in a drunken stupor. I inserted the word fornicated. The New York Post says students complain about having to see the person they got frisky with over the weekend. But it's not that they fornicated with them. They defiled one another. Probably exchanged diseases. I've got a quote from a student at one of these elite institutions. He says, girls feel pressured into wearing revealing or sexualized costumes, and hooking up with as many people as possible becomes a status symbol or a way to climb the high school social ladder. Male behavior, meanwhile, is competitive, even verging on predatory, as girls are turned into objects or trophies. To many high school boys, a successful fest involves hooking up with multiple girls in one night. Folks, if possible, please don't institutionalize your kids, public or private. Because the culture there is under the influence, and in many cases, apparently, even the direct control of other ignorant, stupid children. Hedonistic children are running these institutions. At least at some of the most critical moments when a child must make a decision whether or not to be seduced or to be defiled or to fornicate. It's just depressing and disgusting. Anyway, here at the McBurney compound, we homeschool our children. And we will continue to do so as long as possible until they drag us off and throw us in prison for child abuse. Who knows? It's all happening so fast. I'm probably just pessimistic, but I do have legitimate concerns. Now we go to the bad religion file. A story from the LA Times. Festival goers can be seen on a video online dancing to electronic music and cheering as a man becomes engulfed in flames during a West Hollywood Halloween carnival. Oh, that's why I put that in the bad religion file. Because I believe Halloween now qualifies as a bad religion. I think there are probably as many people celebrating Halloween with a religious fervor than actually go to church on Sunday and actually believe in whatever their pastor's teaching. I know I'm a pessimist. I apologize, but that's just where I'm at. Halloween is now enshrined in the bad religion pantheon. The man who burned to death accidentally started the fire while trying to light a cigarette. He's seen in the video flailing his arms on fire, and some bystanders can be heard cheering. Now, others did help put out the flames, but one bystander just stood there and recorded the scene with a cell phone camera and then posted it online. One partygoer says, quote, "So many people were drunk and partying. People were chanting and clapping and filming and taking pictures like this man on fire was some kind of cool, funny thing." Estrada was taken to Cedar Sinai, where he was pronounced dead. Yeah, the man's name was Gilbert Estrada, 51, who was believed to be drunk and partying. And instead of lighting a cigarette, he lit his costume on fire. And then they danced around his burning body like a funeral pyre at some kind of pagan festival. There's Halloween for you. Any adult who celebrates Halloween, I'm a little creeped out by that, okay? That's all. It just bothers me, okay? I'm not going to judge you and condemn you to hell or anything like that. But if you celebrate Halloween, you put on things and put the blood on and go to parties and get hammered, and I just can't deal with that. I think that you're slightly adolescent and definitely just probably not the kind of person that I would want to hang out with. All right. Now we have some parenting advice from CNN. Always a reliable source for good common sense child rearing advice. They go to Carl Pickert, a psychologist in Austin, Texas. Let me just say at the outset, if you are looking for advice on raising a child, the last person you should talk to is a psychologist from Austin, Texas, especially one who's written a book that's entitled Surviving Your Child's Adolescence. The psychologist, he already understands that most parents, by the time their kids are in their teenage years, the parents are living in hell. How does he know this? He probably wrote books on toddlers and prepubescence as well. And he's building a small industry around terrible parenting advice. He says, you've got to sit down and you've got to have a good talking to with this kid to help. That's right. You've got to hear them out about why whatever they did wasn't safe or why it was against the law or how other people were harmed. And then you take the child and have them take a look at the consequences. That's advice from an Austin, Texas psychologist on how to deal with the out-of-control teenager that he may very well have helped you build. Next, for our sound sage advice from CNN, our trusted source on child-rearing advice, we go to Devra Renner. Devra Renner, that doesn't even sound like a real name. That sounds like he or she made that name up. And perhaps he or she did. Devra Renner is a clinical social worker for a large school district in Northern Virginia, and she has a book, too. Is it a she? Hold on, let me... You know, there's no indication of this person's sex. I don't know what it is, but it wrote a book. Devra? Are you familiar with that name? Sounds like a mispronunciation of Deborah. Japanese? Yeah, something lost in translation there. Anyway, this ambiguous clinical social worker for a large school district in Northern Virginia, she has a book as well. I think it must be a she. I don't know why. It has a book. It's called Mommy Guilt. Learn to Worry Less, Focus on What Matters Most, and Raise Happier Kids. She says, try not to be in the power struggle of the moment, because I've always said there's no rationalizing with a screaming child. Well, right there, if you find yourself having to rationalize with a screaming child, perhaps you've already missed some important pointers in parenting. But Devra wouldn't know, because she is a clinical social worker. How is that different from any other kind of social worker? Oh, I'm a clinical social worker. What does that mean? Are you allowed to work in the abortion clinic? Or are you allowed to dispense abortion pills? Does that make you a clinical social worker? Isn't that mostly what social workers in the schools these days do? They hand out condoms and abortion pills? I don't know. I haven't kept up on that particular field, but I'm just guessing. So we continue with advice from CNN. CNN says if a parent's first course of action to deal with their child's behavior is not working, they should try something else, but probably not spanking. Now, I knew that was going to come up. Probably not. We're not sure what to do. Talk. Time out, do this, do that, give them a pill. But one thing we are sure of, probably not spanking. That's according to psychologists, plural, who say that spanking has been shown to be not good for kids. Uh-huh. Yeah. You know, it's funny. She says if a parent's first course of action to deal with the behavior is not working, they should try something else. Maybe they should have tried spanking the child first. Maybe then they wouldn't have to be going to plan B and C and D and plan Ritalin, that plan. A recent study, back to spanking and CNN's opinion about it, a recent study published in the journal Pediatrics found that five-year-olds who were spanked went on to have greater behavior problems in elementary school than kids who did not get spanked. So there we have it. The data's in. No questions asked. Close the book on spanking. It doesn't work. Well, let me tell you what's behind the data, ladies and gentlemen. Is parents who don't know how to spank. Parents who were not disciplined and trained properly by their parents who were corrupted and polluted and ruined by the government schools and Austin psychologists and clinical social workers and all the rest of the deviant perverts who are hell-bent on destroying America. I'm getting upset. I got to calm down. Bottom line, these parents, since they weren't trained properly, they spanked their children in anger. And they abuse their children. Refusing to listen to any godly advice on the matter, they beat their children in anger, and that is child abuse. And that will, of course, lead to behavior problems. That screws a kid's head up. But it's not the spanking in and of itself, you ignorant heathens. It's the failure to properly and godly, in a godly way, train and discipline your child, and that can include some corporal punishment. I've got a quote from the aforementioned Austin psychologist. He says, spanking teaches hitting. It's that simple. So that if you don't get your way and you're bigger than me, you can hit me to get your way. That's the lesson of spanking, says Carl, the Austin psychologist. Carl, come here, buddy. You know what? That's your lesson about spanking, that it teaches hitting and that, oh, if you're bigger than me, you can hit me to get your way. That's what you learned about spanking. And my guess is that you are a deviant pervert who hates your father because he probably disciplined you incorrectly and screwed your mind up. And so by definition, Carl, the Austin psychologist, you, sir, are unqualified to give advice on the matter. View, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. That's Greasy Kid Stuff. As we come back from our reports on the children in government schools and the psychologists hell-bent on destroying them, an appropriate, kind of weird guitar thing there. All the weirdness that's going on in the world of psychobabble in Austin and elsewhere. Thank you, Mr. Vi. We appreciate your efforts. Now, I have a story. I just wasn't sure where to file this. And having read it, I still don't know what to think, but I think I know what to think. And I'm hoping reading through it with you might help me figure out my feelings on this story. As reported in the New York Daily News last week, a fire started early in the morning on October 31st in a Louisiana-Missouri home. Parents Catherine and Ryan Miller put their child Riley to bed. And then they reportedly fell asleep while watching television near the back of the home. The mom, Catherine, awoke to the smell of smoke. The mom and dad attempted to rush into the child's room, but the heat and the smoke blocked their path. The Miller scrambled out the back door. Then dad, Ryan, kicked in the front door and was about to enter to go after his son, Riley, when he was tasered by police. I said he was tasered. Now, the dad, Ryan, he kept trying to get in. He wouldn't stop. He attempted to go in again. And eventually he was handcuffed and taken to the police station and put in a jail cell. Now, the father admits, he says, quote, I was hysterical, yes, but because I wanted to save my son. unquote. The dad wanted to go into this burning house, and apparently the firemen and the police were too afraid to go in, because I'm sure it was bad, okay? There's fire. It's scary. It's terrible. But the dad wanted to go in, they taser him, and then they handcuff him, and I don't know what to think. This is too bizarre. I'm wondering if there's something I'm missing in this story, because I thought that either the police or the firemen would go in. Right? Isn't that what police and firemen do? Sometimes they even die doing it. That's why we call them heroes. Well, these police and these firemen are anything but heroes in my book. I don't care how big the fire was and how much they thought they might get hurt. Their job is to go save children burning buildings. What's happened to us? But maybe there's something I'm missing, because the story just doesn't make any sense to me. I could see this happening in some European community full of queers and weirdos and socialists. But in Missouri? I don't get it. Did the firemen look at the fire and decide the fire was too scary, so they let the child die? How does that happen? I just don't understand. And so I feel like the police and the firemen here were cowards. That's kind of what I'm feeling right now. Having read through it again with you, I think they were cowards. I think they neglected their duty to do something heroic, even if they might die doing it. The father was certainly willing to die. I would. I would be willing to die if I could get my child out of a burning building. I would be willing to die. And I'm almost certain in my mind, at least in the moment, that if my child was going to burn to death, I'd rather burn to death with her. I wouldn't even want to face the aftermath. Especially if I knew I was standing in the yard. I just couldn't do it. Anyway, Riley, the young son, his funeral was held this past Monday, November 4th. The child died. I just don't understand. All right, so now let's go into the international scene. We go to the war file. The United Nations General Assembly, the UNGA, has overwhelmingly approved an Iranian-authored resolution advocating global nuclear disarmament. No, this isn't from The Onion. This is from the UNGA. Yeah. Yeah, Iran has authored a resolution advocating global nuclear disarmament. Why? Because they want Israel to give up her nuclear weapons. Why? Because that'll make it easier when they drop their nuclear bomb on Tel Aviv. Make it less likely that Tehran will be vaporized. So instead of laughing in the face of these Iranian maniacs, the people at the UN General Assembly, the UNGA, they went ahead and allowed a vote, and lo and behold, the UNGA voted 113-52 in favor of Iran's nuclear disarmament resolution. It's so nice to see those Iranians finally coming to their senses. Unbelievable. The disarmament resolution, as authored by Iran, calls for the total elimination of member states' nuclear arsenals. And this was actually taken seriously at the UN. I mean, as seriously as the UN can be taken. I mean, I don't know. To me, they're like a bunch of children in the student council. They're just up there spending money and trying to figure out ways to seduce and prostitute one another, in my opinion. Where to find cocaine and hookers after work every day. That's what I think is the primary function of the United Nations. The United Nations delegates, I should say. You know, this is like the days of Neville Chamberlain, where people can look right into the face of evil and completely deny reality. But I believe it's much more perilous, because the German army, as mighty as it was in 1939, it still took them an awful long time to conquer Poland. I think it took 2 weeks. It took another week to conquer France. If the Iranians start dropping nuclear weapons, they're going to vaporize cities in a matter of seconds. And a global conflict unlike any other will erupt within minutes. Much more perilous than the days of Neville Chamberlain. Well, by the way, the committee... is the that voted on this Iranian anti-nuclear resolution is called the UNGA's First Committee. Their First Committee. And that committee is chaired by Libya. Now, who in Libya? Nobody even knows who's in charge in Libya. I think it's some cannibal warlord. And one of his lieutenants probably voted yes with the Iranians. It's a scary world out there, ladies and gentlemen. Benjamin Netanyahu knows it. He gave a warning last week. Speaking with the Jerusalem Post, he warned against any agreement with Iran that stops short of making Iran halt its uranium enrichment. Mr. Netanyahu says, quote, Israel understands that there are proposals on the table in Geneva today that would ease the pressure on Iran for concessions that are not concessions at all. This proposal would allow Iran to retain the capabilities to make nuclear weapons, he said during a speech to the Jewish agency, as reported in the Jerusalem Post. So last week there were, and even up until today, Sunday, there were negotiations going on between Iran, the U.S., Russia, China, Britain, France, and Germany. They've been negotiating in Geneva to ease the sanctions that are at least an attempt at crippling the satanic, evil, murderous government of Iran. There has at least been some effort to cripple them financially, economically, and through natural resources. And they're negotiating to lift them. Say, well, if you'll promise us you'll stop with all this, you know, we'll just put you on Medicare, we'll put you on WIC, you know, we'll put you on disability payments. We'll just start giving you money. I mean, I don't know what the negotiations are, but I know typically that's what members of at least our government promise to people in order to get them to do what they want. So U.S., Russia, China, Britain, France, Germany, all negotiating with Iran. Israel's not at the table, by the way. And what does Iran's foreign minister, what did he have to say about the negotiations? Iran's foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif Zarif, as if one Zarif weren't enough. Mohammad Javad Zarif Zarif said to reporters, the talks went well. I'm hopeful that we can move forward. We are making progress. So late news came into the Weekly Worldview studios just before we went to air that a deal was negotiated with Iran and it was blocked. Which country do you think stood up? I'm going to ask my extremely attractive audio engineer. Which country do you think stood up and said, no, we're not going to make a deal with Iran? Was it the U.S., Russia, China, Britain, France, or Germany? It was France. You're right. That's where we are, ladies and gentlemen. The French are the bravest people in the room, and that scares me. That's right. That scares me. A new round of negotiations with Zarif Zarif and the U.S., Russia, China, Britain, France, and Germany. A new round of negotiations is set for November 20th. By the way, John Kerry commented, this is late news just coming in now, in regards to making a deal with Iran, Kerry said, we are not blind, and I don't think we're stupid. You don't think we're stupid, Mr. Kerry? I would like something a little less equivocal than that. Maybe we're not blind and we're not stupid and we're not going to negotiate with a bunch of radical mullahs hell-bent on dropping a nuclear bomb on Tel Aviv. But he didn't. He said, I think we're not stupid. So he's not sure. I mean, if you ask his wife, she's sure. Yes, he's stupid. new negotiations are set for November 20th. I don't know if they'll be in Geneva. Anyway, they're set for November 20th. Thanksgiving Day is November 28th, and as you know, I have all my money in the pool on Israel bombing Iran before Thanksgiving. So there's an eight-day window there. On the eighth day, Natanz was vaporized, and the nuclear mountain that they have there in Iran was vaporized on the eighth day. And it was so. We'll see what happens. But it is a scary world out there. In fact, back to the politics file and talking about Europe, we go to the New York Times, the old gray lady, all the news, fit to print that nobody reads anymore. The New York Times reports that right-wing populists are surging across Europe, rattling established political parties with their hostility toward immigration, the European Union, and austerity. So the right-wing populists are on the rise. The New York Times says all over Europe, established political forces are losing ground to politicians whom they scorn as fear-mongering populists. That's right. Nationalism and populism is on the roll in France, Austria, Britain, Bulgaria, the Czech Republic, Finland, and the Netherlands, just for good measure. And with European Parliament elections next May, well, this rise of the new European right could substantially tip the balance of power toward nationalists and forces intent on halting or reversing integration within the European Union. Now, all that I can understand. I can understand all what's happening in Europe. The communists and the queers and the freaks and the devil worshippers have screwed that continent up for so long that finally some people are saying, you know what? We can go no further. But did you notice there that they're opposed to austerity? That's the difference. Now, the New York Times, they're very manipulative with the turn of a phrase over there at the Times. Here's what they say. In some ways, this is Europe's Tea Party movement. Now, that's all they need to say. They can go on and point out all the differences, but they've said what they've said. They've pointed out that this new right in Europe, well, they're just like the Tea Party, but they're not just like the Tea Party. Even the Times admits that the main difference is that these people want to strengthen and grow government. They don't want to shrink government. And they see the welfare state as an integral part of their national identities. So that's the exact opposite of the Tea Party. It's the total opposite of Tea Party. These are a bunch of socialist whiners who are just ready to be manipulated by the next Hitler, the next Mussolini. Right? That's what they are. Now, the New York Times says, don't worry, the trend in Europe does not signal a return of the fascist demons from the 1930s. Don't worry. Don't worry about that at all, says the Times. Well, we know that could never happen again. All right now! Let's go! And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. So glad that you're back with us. Hopefully it's just a ballroom blitz that's going to happen, not an actual blitz like 1939. But I've got a poll here of European Jews. As reported in Breitbart, a poll of European Jews has found that more than three-quarters of those questioned believed anti-Semitism is on the rise in their home countries. And close to one-third of those polled have considered emigrating because they don't feel safe. This is in Europe. Oh, but I forgot. The New York Times said not to worry about it, so we're not going to worry about it. Thankfully, we have the Times to go to calm everybody down. Now, meanwhile, while all this is happening and the world teeters on the brink of hell, fire, and destruction, and military conflict unseen throughout all of history, the American military is being prepared for just such a time as this. We go to West Point, as reported from the New York Post. Two West Point graduates were married Saturday in the military's academy's first wedding between two men. Right there at West Point, ladies and gentlemen, Larry married Daniel before about 20 guests. And Larry taught Sunday school at the U.S. Military Academy's Cadet Chapel. That's what he was doing before he married his boyfriend in the chapel. Now, we're reminded by the New York Post that West Point hosted two same-sex weddings for women late in 2012, more than a year after New York legalized homosexual marriages. But this past Saturday's wedding was the first time two men defiled the chapel there at West Point. And we have a quote here from Larry. Larry says, quote, "It's maybe one more barrier that's pushed over a little bit, or maybe one more glass ceiling that's shattered that makes it easier for the next couple." That's all these perverts can think about, is the next couple of deviants to come in and defile the chapel. Why? Because they might be able to cruise them and take them home. Hey, don't tell me that they want to be married and loyal one to one another, and that whole lifestyle is nothing like that. You bunch of lying pervert deviants. You're all about hooking up in the back of bars and being filthy and disgusting. Yeah, you put on your face in the daytime, but I know what you are. You bunch of perverts. By the way, Larry, we heard that he taught Sunday school. Well, Daniel, he's getting his master's degree in business administration at Harvard. And Choate, that's Larry Choate, he's applying at Harvard's John F. Kennedy School of Government. And that's so they can further corrupt Western civilization in both the private and the public sector. One gets an MBA, one goes to the School of Government. The Post reports that the pair met through a friend, and we don't even want to go into the details about what that might have been all about. The two are expected to divorce or file restraining orders against one another in the fall of 2016 and are registered at the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe. I made that up. Because if you don't laugh at this, it makes you so fearful for the future and for the children and for anything that's good and righteous and holy and wholesome and uplifting and clean and respectable and decent. Well, you start to go crazy. And here's the other issue, because I hate even talking about this stuff, about these people and what they do. These homosexualists have made sexuality a public issue, and sexuality should not be a public issue. It should not be discussed in public at all. And I don't care any kind of sexuality, whether it's deviant or normal, it just shouldn't be a public issue. But these perverts, when they come out, they're coming out festivals, and they force sexuality into the front of everybody's mind. When these perverts stand up and tell you what they do, that forces you to think about sex, because they brought it up, and it shouldn't even be brought up in public. It's a private matter between a man and his wife, frankly. But they force thoughts about sexuality into the front of everyone's mind, and this is akin, I believe, to sexual assault. It's a psychological sexual assault on everyone around the pervert, the queer who comes out of the closet, out loud and proud. It's a sexual assault on society, and especially on the children. You deviant pervert bastards. In the chapel at West Point. What's going on? This is unbelievable. Meanwhile, from the Further Queering of America file, I have to talk about it, ladies and gentlemen. They're on the march. There's a war going on. And if the queers win, everybody dies, by the way. You get right down to the bottom of it. The new Employment Non-Discrimination Act, appropriately titled ENDA. Yeah, the end of the world as we know it. As soon as they force employers to let any kind of deviant pervert do anything disgusting and filthy they want in public in the workplace, and you can't fire them. ENDA. Does anyone else see the irony in the naming of this attempt at a new law? The Employment Non-Discrimination Act, ENDA. It was voted up in the Senate. I guess it won because all the senators have been appropriately queered to do this. And now in the House, it's expected to lose because they just don't have enough pervs in the Congress yet in the House. But they will, don't worry. Every year, they'll get one or two more in there. And according to Breitbart, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act itself broadly defines the term sexual orientation and gender identity. Under the Act, an individual's actual or perceived sexual orientation or gender identity can never be the basis for dismissal from their job. The Act also defines gender identity as the gender-related identity, appearance, or mannerisms of an individual with or without regard to the individual's designated sex at birth. It's just so twisted, I can't even get my head around it. All right, but I know it's bad, and I cannot even believe that this could be introduced in an American governmental body. I shouldn't say I can't believe it. I'm very disappointed that something like this has to be discussed. All right, do I want to do this foul-mouthed heathen preacher from Texas? No. Chick covered with tattoos jumps up. She's at a United Methodist preacher. She made the news on in the Washington Post this week. United Methodist preacher, she's got tattoos. She swears, she wears a tight tank top and jeans. Curses during her sermons. Gets introduced like a rock star. Is there anything I want to talk about her? Oh, this is what I found interesting. When the Washington Post reporter was down writing the story about this tatted-up, foul-mouthed United Methodist female, by the way, past, I think, looks kind of female, looks kind of male, actually. The pastor was introduced like a rock star with the big music and the lights. You know how the big United Methodist churches are. You know, it's like a big music festival. And she jumps on up there on stage, and the Post reports that she was leading the cheering crowd into an impassioned round of hymn singing, and then the tatted-up, foul-mouthed, clipped-haired, clenched-jawed United Methodist pastor springs on stage to do a reading from her book. Her book? I thought when you got in the pulpit there was a book that was already... No? Okay, I'm sorry. That it's a United Methodist Church. They write their own books. Forgive me. I guess I'm just not that hip. All right, now from the science, really? File. Earth-shaking news, headline in USA Today, there may be other planets like ours. That's right. It seems to me like every month or so there's a story like this, right? We've run the numbers. We're looking out in space. We think that this planet, the planet that we're on, it's really not that special. There's probably hundreds, thousands. And according to this story, let me see here. They've run the numbers. How many is it now? They say that the nearest Earth-like planet, first of all, may only be 12 light years away. And there's estimates that there could be 40 billion planets like Earth all throughout the universe. How do we know this? Have we found one? Have we seen one? Have we received radio communications from intelligent life on another planet? No. We've just run the numbers. And we're from the University of California, Berkeley, and the University of Hawaii, and you're going to have to trust us on this. We did a study. Planets like our Earth, according to these University of Berkeley and Hawaii professors or whatever, scientists, undergrads, I don't know who these people are. They say planets like our Earth are relatively common throughout the Milky Way galaxy. Yeah, there might be about 40 million, 40 billion. Did I say million? 40 billion of them. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they're everywhere. Really common. Now, this is from USA Today. I apologize. USA Today says temperatures must be just right for life to develop. Planets must have a so-called habitable zone with lukewarm temperatures so that water would not be frozen into ice or vaporized into steam, but instead remain a liquid. We've gone through this before, right, people? You all know this. I know this, the habitable zone, liquid water, all that, key to life. So these professors, scientists, and their undergrad co-ed students have all figured out that according to the best analysis of the data from the Kepler telescope, there are now 40 billion chances for life to get started and to evolve. First of all, just to say that there's a chance for life to get started, I mean, that's blind faith. You people laugh at us Christians because we think an intelligent, almighty God created the universe. You think that life just gets started and then evolves. Well, what starts it, you ignorant, stupid heathen? You people are idiots. Now, there are some doubters, Noted MIT astronomer Sarah Seeger, who was not a part of the study, says, well, the findings in the analysis are robust, but you have to read the fine print to understand that the numbers are somewhat uncertain. And that's all she's willing to say because she hopes to have a career in science. And if you question the old universe model, the Big Bang Theory, if you question any of that, if you question any of this in any way, you're probably not going to have a career, Sarah. So you've probably said enough and you feel like you have to shut up and that's it, right? So they say there could be tens of billions of Earth-like planets in each galaxy. By the way, let me just point out, both Earth and Mars are in what these scientists allege to be the habitable zone. Yeah, these academics say the habitable zone in our particular solar system encompasses both the Earth's orbit and Mars. They're both in there. But oddly enough, none of these academics who teach this as a fact or even reliable theory to their students, none of them have volunteered to do a camp out on Mars with just a pup tent. Even, hey, it's in the habitable zone. And if you, even if you die, there's a good chance that, you know, you die there, life might get started from whatever's left of you, and then it might evolve. Don't you have any faith in science? No camp out on Mars. Absolutely not. All right, now, this is an issue that's very, very, oh my goodness, I'm almost out of time. Well, I'm actually out of time, but fortunately, I really have no restrictions. Since we go out on the internet to a worldwide audience, and we're unconstrained by the bounds of the traditional broadcast media or even terrestrial radio, I could just go on and on for as long as I want. And since I did the sermon at Denver Bible Church this morning, I'm feeling really fired up. So I'm going to dive into this very controversial subject as we come to a close. I'm not going to go on much further. I've got a couple more quick things, but very controversial about vaccinations. I got a story here. I've had discussions with friends of mine, dear friends, Christian brothers and sisters who I love and respect. They don't want to vaccinate their kids. We vaccinated our kids. Anyway, there's an ongoing discussion, and I have struggled to find a moral argument for getting your kids vaccinated. Now, I think there is a logical argument and a scientific argument based on the fact that these diseases don't ravage communities and nations anymore. It just doesn't happen. So it's obvious that the vaccines work. Now, were the vaccines developed in immoral ways by immoral people? Well, more than likely they were. I mean, I don't know personally. I suppose I could study it and find out all the facts about how each vaccine was designed and what was used, and maybe somebody was murdered or they used monkey's blood, or they're putting vaporized mercury in your kid's veins. I don't know. I suppose I could get into all the minutia and try to figure that out. But bottom line, ever since the polio vaccine came out in the 50s, all these diseases have been virtually halted, so I know they work. And since the entire world is filled with corrupt, lying, murdering, fallen people, I assume that these vaccines were probably created by scientists just like that. Like so many other medicines and foods and appliances and everything else that I use in my daily life, if I go back and look at how they were all designed, I'm probably going to find a Mengele behind everything. At least one Mengele in the mix behind everything. So I haven't gone in to look at exactly who designed the lamps that I use and the food that I eat. And, you know, I don't have time to do that. Right? You could spend your whole life doing that. Look at who developed aspirin and Tylenol and Advil. I'm sure there's a freak pervert involved somewhere, right? And unethical behavior, I'm certain of it. Anyway, well, when it comes down to these vaccinations, I've got a story here. Like I say, I've struggled to find a moral imperative to say to the people who are not vaccinating your children that perhaps you're doing something immoral. Well, let me walk with me on this, and I'm open to debate on this. I'm not going to be dogmatic, but I just want to state my case here. From CBS out in Baltimore, there's a report: deadly diseases once nearly wiped out are making a frightening comeback all across the country. Measles, mumps, and whooping cough are all deadly diseases that until recently were virtually eliminated thanks to vaccines. But now more and more people are coming down with these diseases, and people are even dying. And I had this discussion with a good Christian brother friend of mine, and he said, well, I just can't see the reason why if you don't vaccinate yourself or your children, I don't see how you're sinning against anyone else. And frankly, neither could I until I read the story. It turns out, according to biologists, that children who are too young to get the vaccine are defenseless against the disease. And they're living proof that one contagious person can start an outbreak. For example, if a 10-year-old has one of these diseases and is in a Walmart near a 3-week-old baby, that 10-year-old could infect that 3-week-old baby and could even lead to the death of that 3-year-old baby because the 3-year-old is defenseless against the disease that the 10-year-old could have been vaccinated against. And so here it is. If you allow yourself or your family members to become a vector by which some other innocent person could be injured or killed, well, I think there's a moral issue there. All right? And like I say, I'm open to discussion on the issue, but there it is for what it's worth. Now quickly before we close, I want to address this story about the Miami Dolphins and the bully and the wimp, and I don't know all the details because I could care less about two fat, overgrown, stupid, moronic children and what their interpersonal problems are, okay? And frankly, the NFL to me has become a circus. It's pretty disgusting to watch what goes on. But in this story about Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin, what I think I've found is one of the reasons that Tim Tebow can't get a job in the NFL. Because if you look at what's coming out about the culture of the NFL, with the interviews with the strip club owners about one of these players' antics and the foul-mouthed video rant that one of these fat morons, you know, going off and being foul and vulgar. If you look at that, I mean, it leads me to believe that there's a culture within the NFL that's probably not unusual among young men, and I think I experienced it when I was in the military. It's a culture that's fueled by pride, testosterone, youth, and stupidity. And that culture cannot tolerate Tim Tebow. He makes them uncomfortable. Why? Because he actually loves them. And true love can be uncomfortable. Yeah. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, something to uplift us as we ponder the fact that Tim Tebow may never throw another pass in the NFL. We go to the domestic tranquility file. A man looking for his abducted cousin kicked in the back door of an abandoned house and shot and killed her kidnapper this past week. And the shooting has been ruled justified by the Lafayette, Louisiana Parish Sheriff's Department. Yep. Apparently the police had looked for this woman whose ex-boyfriend, father of her child, had kidnapped her. And he found her. The cousin saw the man stabbing 29-year-old Bethany Arsenault, and he broke through the door. The cousin fired several shots with a handgun, and inside the officers found the body of Scott Thomas, who had had a child with the woman he kidnapped and had previously violated a restraining order protecting her. New York Mayor and gun control advocate Michael Bloomberg immediately issued a press release demanding that Louisiana police end the practice of allowing armed rednecks to roam the countryside in dangerous posse fashion in search for crime victims. No? We haven't heard from Bloomberg on this? Oh, that's right, I made this up. I made that last part up about Bloomberg. I apologize. I thought that was in the copy. It's pretty appropriate that Bloomberg is being replaced by a communist, a flat-out communist, de Blasio. And if I had to choose where to live, I'd rather live in Lafayette Parish, where they let rednecks take out the criminals, than live in Bloomberg or de Blasio's New York. I wish the best to all you poor people. You get what you deserve. That's it for the Weekly Worldview, ladies and gentlemen. Should the Lord tarry, I'll be back with you next week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, DenverBibleChurch.com, Theology Online, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, and as always, my other brother, Darrell, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studios, I'll be back next week, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.